In other words, sheer numbers, whether it's 5 or 10 or 20 or 30. So that if it's a question of closing some hospital facilities in order to have more sisters in hospitals, I don't think just having more sisters in hospitals is of itself a guarantee either of a better community life or a more authentically Catholic institution. I think that the more sisters there are in a given institution, the more full community life can be lived. For one thing, you can meet more people. Chores can be shared. Not everybody is putting in what, not sure about you, but some sisters have told me, they're putting in 2 full shifts. You know what that does to prayer life, community life, one's emotions, everything. So I'm not underestimating the value of having a larger number of sisters in a hospital. I would place the stress, however, on the larger number of sisters in a given hospital, not so much with due regard for sisters' question, to ensuring that because there's a larger number of sisters, you're going to surely have a more Catholic institution, but that I would expect there would be a more normal community life, if for no other reason than because you had more people to share the work, to be together, and God knows we need one another. So we could spend like a half an hour a day just in conversation. Without hearing myself paged 7 times during the 30 minutes of conversation. However, this matter of the Catholic moral principles being or not being observed in hospitals is, to my mind, if you want my honest opinion, the gravest single question facing your community today. Because I think I asked and I was answered, yes, you are in hospital work, except for the 2 lone exceptions, if we might call them such, that is the house of prayer and the mission, and even the mission, don't you want a dispensary? Your whole focus is on hospital facilities. Now the problem is deeper than your community, it's deeper than the problems affecting religious life. The issue at stake, as you see, is a confrontation of 2 ideologies, which I briefly tried to surface during my conference. The ideology of the world that we talked about, we know, is not just something out there. It's something which has entered not merely the practice of the people around us. It's entered our laws, our juridical institutions. It has entered the minds of the many people who both built our facilities, support them, work with us in them, and on whom we, if not completely, at least very greatly depend for our future apostolate. I'm using the hour now because I'm identifying myself with you, because this is the church's problem today in the hospital apostolate. Now there, whatever decisions you make about the number of institutions you have, if I may suggest, I think the focus ought to be on a strong community life. And whatever numbers may be necessary to ensure that, and to say without hesitation, I hope you've heard this before, between offering the hospital facility and your community life comes first. You know why? Because others can offer hospital facilities. But unless the community life is strong, you won't even have hospitals. There won't be committed personnel, I mean religious, to staff them. And community life is absolutely essential for the sustenance of our religious life. The suggestion that I've made, and this is not the first time I've met this, and it would be well, I think, if something were done about it, and maybe after your elections are finished, I would like to think that what was a suggestion here took root. I think the time has come when religious communities like yours, not all communities are like yours, agree? Well, you might say, well, of course they're not. What I mean is, not all religious communities are women, as I read your faces, are as concerned about maintaining Catholic moral principles in their institutions. Do you know that? Don't you?
Yes.
Well, let me enlighten you. Do you mind if I... Recently, I was approached by the Chancellor of a large Midwestern Archdiocese. And I was shown a letter which the Archbishop received. The letter was from the administrator of the largest Catholic hospital in his Archdiocese. She wrote out, almost verbatim, the ideas of one, still nominally Catholic moralist, was traveling across the country, teaching against the Bishop's Code on Hospital Ethics. And she said, Your Excellency, very cordially worded, you could tell a deft feminine hand. As we tell ourselves, when we're together just as men, a good, dedicated woman is the greatest asset in the church. A bad, dedicated woman is a grave crisis to cope with. She told the Archbishop, we planned and she gave him the date to begin the following practices. She went right down the line. Sterilization, contraception, intrauterine devices. And, though euphemistically worded, abortions. If by this date you do not hear from Your Excellency, it was Excellency all over the paper, we will assume you have approved these practices. The date is 2 weeks off. Pray for the Archbishop. He has not yet made a decision. Now the decision is a test case, I know it. The option the Bishop has, as I informed the chancellor who asked me my opinion is a very simple one. This woman, and evidently those that support her, are absolutely convinced that they cannot continue operating, that is, continue giving their facilities without all these practices being accepted on the hospital staff. Absolutely sure. The bishop, therefore, has only one choice. So I informed him through his chancellor. To inform Her Excellency that she has to call her administration together and they should make their decision. And he should give them a date and give them 6 weeks, 3 months. By which date they are to inform him in a formal document that this hospital is committed to the ethical directives of the Catholic Church or that it is not. If by that date they decide that they wish to operate their hospital on those premises, they should inform him, and he will be delighted with their decision. If, however, they decide by his date that they cannot continue their facilities on those premises, as of that date, he, the Archbishop, will officially inform the press that hospital is no longer a Catholic institution of this archdiocese. Does it make sense, sisters?
Yes. Yes.
Now my recommendation. I think that communities like yours, and there are more than you would perhaps think, some are struggling and wavering. They need help. You find out who they are and find out soon. I think a year would be too long. I really do. The pressure is extreme. And the lawsuits are waiting in the wings. That you know who you are, different communities who are in hospital practice, agree that you will observe the directives of the church, and then put some teeth into your agreement. Make this publicly known. Isolated and alone sisters, relict. We've got to organize. I know this, as I mentioned, did I, at the beginning, that I personally knew the founder of the Catholic Hospital Association?
Yes.
Do you know who he is, by the way? Father Molinier. Molinier. He was a French Jesuit, but he was, well, I don't know that much about his own personal background, but he lived here in the community for about 3 years before he died in our infirmary. And who knows the date of the founding of the Catholic Hospital Association? Any idea? 1915. Well, it's something over 50 years. I think the Catholic Hospital Association today does not have the teeth in it to protect its member institutions from the pressure of our, to put it mildly, non-Christian culture. You stand together, if you witness together, you do good service to the community, the people will love you for it, as they have over the years, And even though they're not Catholic or even Christian, we'll choose your hospitals because they respect your integrity. Do you know that a lot of women nowadays are afraid to enter many hospitals they don't know, for example? They come with some abdominal or female disorder. They don't know what's going to happen to their reproductive system, depending on the doctor's ethics. All he's got to know is that she's got 4 children. I know 1 county in 1 state. Of course, it was never tested in the courts, where the county informed that women who have had more than, that have had 3 children, should be sterilized. And Catholic women were warned not to go to those hospitals. I was hospitalized last summer for surgery, and my regular doctor went to Europe on vacation, so he asked if I wouldn't mind having a woman doctor kind of taper off my stay in the hospital. Well, she turned out to be a young doctor from Czechoslovakia. I'd seen her at most early 30s. We got to talking, and I asked her, she was very non-communicative, why she left her country. Well, she said, I was in gynecology, and the law in my country is we must abort every child after the 3rd. Otherwise, we lose our medical license. I couldn't do it. So she found some legal way of leaving the country and is now in the United States and will never return. And you know the laws that are now on the books in the United States already. You're in competition with those facilities. But be in competition with them. May I suggest, therefore, that you know about one another, coordinate, cooperate, and build some sanctions into your cooperative endeavor. Can I spend another, this is so basic, isn't it? Another minute or two of what we have done, because this is one of the crises in the Society of Jesus with our schools. Same thing. We're in competition with other institutions who couldn't care less what philosophy the institution has. Some 10 years ago, I remember talking to the prefect, as we call them, for our high schools in the province, Chicago province. And he was saying that one of our high schools, but it happened to be University of Detroit High School, received a statement from the North Central Association, which, as you know, standardizes high schools and colleges, informing U of D High School that as of a certain date, they must have a whole spread of vocational courses like machine shop and woodwork and mechanical drawing and so on. And if they didn't, they would lose their accreditation. Now, we never built a high school for that purpose. It was a prep high school for college work, and our men just were not trained for that, and we didn't feel that our philosophy could be as well communicated by teaching machine shop as by teaching, for example, literature or history. So we wrote back and said we would consider this, but we were warned, because we had been warned before and didn't take action. We were told by our general, this is some years ago, to form a national association called the JEA, Jesuit Educational Association. So what Father Sullivan did, he said, was to write to the JEA, and the officials then in turn wrote to all our Jesuit universities in the country. We've got 28. Told them, we are in trouble with one of our high schools. Will you help? Here's what we want you to do. To sign a document to the effect that as of a certain date, these universities, all Jesuits, will not accept students who are graduates of North Central approved high schools unless the liability against the University of Detroit High School is forthwith removed. The next letter from the North Central was, there was a misunderstanding. Am I clear, sisters? We've got to organize and exert the legitimate power we have for the glory of God. Please explain the difference between religious and secular institutes. The essential difference is not that the one practices the councils and the other does not. Both practice the evangelical councils. Nor is it even that the one takes vows that are approved by the church and the other does not. No. The most significant difference between the two is that religious live a community life and secular institutes do not. And that among the evidences of that community life are all that corporate this and corporate that, which we spoke about this morning. I counsel people in secular institutes. Theirs is a very difficult life. Do you know that in the world today there are less than 40,000 people in all secular institutes combined, where the total population in religious institutes is somewhere this side of 2 million? To belong to a secular institute is a very specialized and difficult vocation. Many sisters have experimented with monthly allowances. Is this in keeping with corporate poverty? Yes, provided the monthly allowance is not such as to equivalate even a modest salary. In other words, if the allowance is, well, the word allowance has connotations which I don't like. In other words, where a certain amount of, call it pocket money, is given for such needs as a person may have, so that he or she would not have to be constantly, for every least and little thing, be approaching the superior. However, it has to be very carefully controlled. An account must be given of it. The big thing is the amount. Or rather, two big things. The amount and the account. How's that? If the policy-making body resides only in the superior general and the counselors, how does this fit in with collegiality? Oh, no. No, the policy-making body is you, in the sense of legislative body. Did you know that? Now, obviously, the word polity can be variously understood. You shouldn't have, and I trust you will not, sink to this level. Well, you have an ongoing, continual chapter. You know some communities are having that? They just meet regularly. Nobody even knows where they're meeting. They're just meeting constantly. And they're making rules as they play the game. That's what they're doing. In the nature of things, a chapter meets only periodically. And I noticed a little proviso about how often. Am I correct?
Yes.
You meet. How often is it?
4 years.
Every 4 years. And notice the difference between, was it 2 years?
We asked for 2 years.
It used to be
six.
You see? Now, as you gather, you were touching on the delicate question of what is policy making. Because the very fact that you even thought of reducing it from 6 to 2, was it?
6 to 2.
Well, of course, if I may say, you were shrewd in asking, because you got 4, is that correct? Now, I'm not suggesting that kind of shrewdness, and I don't think you did it with any cunning in mind. But a community ought to have a policy in this sense, that it should have a body of principles which are sufficiently stable that the future of that community is not in the state of crisis every time the chapter meets. Does that make sense? Now, the trouble, of course, is the same business of conformity. At one extreme, you've got people who have really denied the existence of a chapter. They're just meeting at all sorts of odd times and coming out with pronunciamentos that contradict what they said just a month before. So, to realize that in order to ensure that your sisters, first of all, remain firm in their vocation, and secondly, that girls that will enter and that you want to enter your community have some guarantee of stability, there must be something which is stable, something which won't change, as the girls know, I am told by Mother Generals. You know Mother Timothy? I forget her last name.
Timothy.
Where's that?
Mokina.
Well, she made a retreat this summer that I gave. And she told me, you know, it used to be we would interview and test and all kinds of things before we'd accept the girl. And they were made to feel lucky that we took them. Well, it's quite different now. Well, we do some testing now, too. But you know what now? They insist on interviewing the Mother General. And they ask me, now, Mother, if I enter your community 10 years from now, will you be wearing a habit? Will you still be in Catholic schools? Will you be having community prayers? Because they've seen so many things being done in the name of religious life that, well, like any intelligent girl will do, she'll look around. Is this important to say, sisters? That in your chapter deliberations, you first of all reassure your own sisters, and then assure those whom God, you trust, will be sending you, that the word policy will not become what it does become in many business enterprises, where the policy of a corporation changes with a stock market. They would suddenly decide, for example, they will just not manufacture a certain product. Well, they will withhold or withdraw, call back, all kinds of things in order to save the market, or merge, or do all kinds of things. Now this, religious communities cannot afford to do. See? That kind of policy making, which I would like to call policy playing, we cannot afford. We're dealing with sacred commitments between souls and God. Now, having said that, to answer the question, if the policy-making body reside only in the superior general and the four counselors, how does this fit in with the collegiality? Well, no. In that stable sense of, first of all, preserving, and the word must be used, preserving your authentic spirit. That, I would say, in today's unstable world is your primary duty. No matter what else you do,